Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Pavone Group and Vigor, a branding and marketing agency for restaurant, beverage, and hospitality brands. Learn more at vigorbranding.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hello, everyone. Today's guest is Anand Gala of Gala Capital Partners. Put simply, Anand is an investor, and one of those investments is restaurants. But I've known him for quite a while, and I'm always blown away by his stories, his growth, and everything in between. So this will be a great conversation. Anand, welcome to Fork Tales. Thanks for doing this program.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Michael.
Perfect. Well, hey, so I know we were talking, catching up a little bit before, because I'm fortunate to have known you for a while. I was saying, when people hear about Gala Capital Partners, it sounds very regal, which it is. It's an amazing company, and the growth is astronomical, which we'll talk about. But it didn't really all start out that way, did it?
You know, no. Everybody's got a story. I guess you can say everybody's got a story, and mine is probably very familiar to many others that are, you know, that were raised in immigrant families that came from humble beginnings. And it's just a story of a lot of hard work. It's a story of intentionality by my family, by my parents, to really invest in me in an education around operations and around entrepreneurship that candidly, none of us really knew we were doing at the time.
Yeah, I mean, you were literally, I think when I first met you, you were a child basically being babysat by the dishwasher, right? You were in the restaurants at a young age. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So my mom was a franchisee of Jack in the Box, and that was early on when they just began franchising. I think she might have been franchisee number two. Wow. And that was 1982 or 83. I must have been 8 or 9 years old, and she started working 16, 18, 20 hours a day. Because, you know, that's what an operator does. That's what an entrepreneur does. You have to figure it out. And I just didn't see her very often. And so therefore, the best way for her to make sure that she had an eye on me and I spent time with her was for her to bring me to work. And that was daycare. That was after school care. That was vacations and holiday care. You know, that's what it was. That's how I spent my time. And so I literally grew up in the back of a restaurant, and in some cases, standing on a milk crate so I could see over the front counter and talk to customers. But that was it, within eyesight and earshot.
That's great. And you know, the restaurant business has to be in your blood, and obviously, it was literally infused in you from a young age. And I think that's you can't help to learn, you can't help to see. I think it's one of the most incredible experiences for anybody. Is to work in a restaurant. You learn a lot about sales. You learn a lot about people, about hustle, about just everything in between. Dealing with problems on your feet when someone complains. It's a phenomenal way to get an education. That's for sure.
Absolutely, and I'll take it a step further. I think it's fascinating because it not only teaches you all of the things that you mentioned. It's usually the first job for many young adults or teenagers. It teaches them work ethic. It teaches them responsibility. And one thing that candidly, I'm not sure how it gets taught other than maybe in the home or through your church or temple or what have you, but it's respect for others, regardless of the position that they're in. It's an appreciation for hard work and how much it takes to really earn a dollar. And the fact that people do what they do so that they can support themselves, their families, have some spending money, develop some independence, it's remarkable. And, you know, those are lessons and values that don't get taught very often in many other places.
No doubt. So, okay. So you're young, you're in a restaurant, you're eight, then you go to USC, right? And you graduate with a degree in biology. So that was, you weren't on the restaurant path, I don't think, at that point. So what happened there? Where were you headed? Where did you go? And how did you end up here?
Yeah. It's, you know, don't all good restaurant operators, go into the sciences? Of course. It is a fascinating path, and it's one that, you know, my parents recognized how hard the restaurant business was. And they wanted my brother and I to have a better life. They wanted us to get an education and really not have to go through the trials and tribulations that they went through, as every parent wants for their children. So they thought, hey, we'll have our kids become doctors. That would be great. And I thought, boy, wouldn't medical school be easier than running a restaurant? Until I, you know, I took the med school entrance exams and I tried a couple of interviews for med schools. And I realized that's not what I wanted to do. I probably should have come to that conclusion much, much earlier in college, but I waited until the end. And, you know, I thought, okay, I'll just go help out in the family business because I know how to do that. And my parents thought, okay, you know, he's going to realize how hard this is and he'll change his mind quickly and run to med school. And as I got back into the business, I realized how much it just came second nature, how much I truly enjoyed it, and candidly, how much it had to offer. When I was growing up, I thought, boy, the only thing it has to offer is operations. And I got a great education and experience in operations. But when I returned to the business after university, I realized I can learn about finance, I can learn about accounting, I can learn about marketing, I can learn about HR, I can learn about IT, I can get into real estate. It was so multidimensional. It was remarkable. And it just captivated me. It drew me in. And I had an insatiable curiosity and appetite to learn. And so every single day, it drew me in further and further and further to the point that there was just no return. This was it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, so, I mean, now we'll jump into to life after school. You get involved as a franchisee, correct? That was your first sort of foray. You were young. I think you bought your first franchise, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, growing up in the restaurant space was fantastic. But the challenge at the time within Jack in the Box was there were a limited number of franchisees that were allowed to expand. And it was because the company was in a very large expansion phase for itself. Mm-hmm. And so in large markets like Houston and Los Angeles, where we operated, there simply weren't that many opportunities for us because the company had already scouted them out and had already tied them up. So I left the family business when I was 25, and I became, I think, the youngest franchisee for Applebee's and started building stores throughout California. The exact same time, same year, I became, I believe, also the youngest franchisee for Del Taco at the time. Wow. And I was 25 years old. I was building Applebee's from Bakersfield to Fresno and later in the Bay Area, and was building Del Taco restaurants outside of Sacramento and Modesto and Stockton and small markets there, as well as in Phoenix, Arizona. And so I was traveling a lot. And I think when you're young and you're not married and you don't have other responsibilities and you've got a lot of energy. You can really, you know, push the pedal. And so I did. I learned a great deal during that period of time. And I learned a lot about what I did know and what I didn't know. I'll tell you, there were many, many humbling experiences. Okay. Because when you're 25, you have a great deal of confidence and bravado. And I had a couple of lessons that I learned the hard way. And I think I'm far better off for it today.
Yeah, we learn a lot more from our mistakes and our wins. That's for sure. Yeah, and so it's interesting too because we'll talk about this in a moment. But I mean, you know, obviously, you know, at Vigor we do marketing for restaurants, and we deal with franchisees, and we deal with franchisors, the folks that own the brand and control the brand. And sometimes there's dissension among the ranks. I mean, there's, you know, and you're on both sides of it. So I'll be really interested to hear your perspective on the whole thing.
Yeah, it's been a fascinating journey, having been a franchisee from 83 all the way to, or 82, I guess, all the way to, I think about 2014 is when we finally decided we were going to start selling, or not start selling the brands, but we exited most of the brands that we were involved in. And so prior to that, we had sold our Jack in the Box business and sold our Del Taco business. And then by 2014, sold our Applebee's business. And we still are franchisees of Famous Dave's Barbecue in California. But then starting in 2017, we started investing in and acquiring small franchisors. And what's interesting is we took a very different approach to being a franchisor. Having walked a mile in the shoes of the franchisee, literally, and still being a franchisee, I fundamentally understand the approach to business and the relationship. that a franchisee has. And I try to bring that knowledge and experience and insight to the relationship that we bring as a franchisor. We acknowledge that a franchisee makes their money off the bottom line and a franchisor makes their money off the top line. Mm-hmm. That being said, discounting your royalty is not the solution, because you want a financially strong franchisor that has the capital to make the investments in the people and the systems and the resources to really drive your business. If you cut the royalty down to, call it 1%, what's left for them? Mm-hmm. You're not going to get the best talent. You're not going to get the best support. And so it becomes a vicious cycle if you go down that road. I think that what most franchisees do focus on, and I think many recognize, is rather than try to reduce the royalty, let's drive accountability and expectations with the franchisor to say, we expect best-in-class marketing, best-in-class leadership, best-in-class operations. And so please make sure that you're hiring those people. Make sure that you're driving those attributes through the brands, because that's what makes us better. You know, please invest in us. Please support us. And that's how we try to bring the parties together. That doesn't mean that we're free of any discontent from time to time, but that's our responsibility, is to work through that.
Sure. I mean, I've always said, and I feel very strongly, that empathy is probably one of the more powerful, like, emotions, if you will. And, you know, understanding both sides of it from where your seat, from growing up in it and then being on the other side, it's, I think that's very powerful to have that understanding, that intelligence that, hey, I understand, I've been in your shoes. I know what's important to you. Here's what's important. And there's this partnership, right? It's almost like you treat them with as family, and it's, they're a part of your company, because they are. I mean, they're your brand, right? They're an extension of it.
Absolutely. And I would even go a step further, and I'd encourage each and every executive or leader in a franchisor to go work a week and do that every single year in the stores. Mm-hmm. Because honestly, you don't know what a franchisee goes through. You don't know what a store manager goes through until you've done it. You may have the best degrees on the wall and lots of experience from lots of other brands. But until you really walk a mile and do what they do, then I think you build a tremendous amount of credibility and candidly empathy at the same time.
Sure.
So I think it helps you connect with lots of operators and franchisees.
That's great. So, okay. So one of your biggest investments was Mooyah, burgers, fries, and shakes. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and I was fortunate. I actually came out to see you. I was out in California and I ate at one of your restaurants. It was phenomenal. It was a great burger. I'm not just saying that now, but the thing is, there's lots of burgers out there. And I was quoted on a previous podcast. I had a gentleman by the name of Audley Wilson on, who created a Robo Burger, which is the the burger vending machine. And, you know, my line was, no one in America ever went bankrupt trying to feed America hamburgers. So, I mean, but there's a lot of competition out there, isn't there? I mean, how do you guys stand out? I mean, you know, I know it's a phenomenal product with great ingredients, but talk a little bit about Mooyah.
Well, I'll frame it in a way that I think you'll definitely get, and I'm sure your audience will get, which is, why compete with everybody else? Why play their game? If you're playing somebody else's game, then you are automatically at a disadvantage, because they've been playing it a lot longer. They created the rules. They've been doing this for a while and they know how to win. They're going to tilt the deck in their favor. So I think you have to decide what you do that is distinct, that is different. How do you define yourself? And so at Mooyah, it's a very simple approach. It's better ingredients. It's better quality. It's better tasting. And it's done with more hospitality, and it's done fresh in store every day. And so that's the approach we take, is that we want to have fresh, never frozen meat, and we want it to be certified Angus beef. We fresh bake our buns in the stores every day. We hand cut our fries. You know, we only use the highest quality ingredients, and we don't make anything until you order it. So these are all of the different things that we think are distinct and unique. And, you know, nobody ever disliked high quality and great taste.
That's right.
So our perspective is, we're going to compete on taste, on quality, on service, on experience. Now, that may cost a little bit more, but candidly, when you put it all together and you're doing sort of the value formula, it still comes out to be a tremendous value because of what you get, not what you pay.
Yeah, no doubt. So, okay, burgers aren't your only restaurant. You're involved with a portfolio. You have pizza, tacos, coffee, and everything in between. What criteria do you use when evaluating which restaurants to invest in?
Well, your statement earlier, which was nobody ever lost money selling hamburgers to Americans, I would take it a step further and say, you know, there's a bunch of different categories where the world already knows what you do and how to use your business or your product or your brand. And so we focus on five primary categories. That doesn't mean that we won't look at and invest in things around the periphery as well. But those five categories are burger, chicken, tacos or Mexican, pizza, and coffee. And not only are they pervasive in American society, and candidly, I think foundational, but I think that what American society, culture, and its tremendous marketing machine behind so many of its companies has done a great job of is exporting that culture around the world. I can open up a coffee joint anywhere in the world, and I can guarantee you that that local community knows exactly how to use that brand, that product, that concept. The same is true with pizza. The same is true with chicken. The same is true with tacos and Mexican food. And thank God for the Taco Bells and the Chipotles and so many others that have blazed a trail before us. And that is it, for example, just in the Mexican category, but the same is true in each and every one of those categories. So our primary focus is within these five big categories. Mm-hmm. We love these brands and we think we can bring a higher quality, better experience approach to each and every one of them.
That's fantastic. So you went from being a franchisee to now you own these brands and you own, is it Rusty Taco, you have CeCe's Pizza, Dunn Brothers Coffee, Muya Burger, am I missing one?
Nope, that's it. That's
is that it? It? Okay, good. I nailed it.
Those are the main ones. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So we've invested in these brands, and some of them we've got partners, and you know we're just excited. We think that each and every one of them plays a significant role in how you serve the customer. So, for example, CeCe's Pizza is a buffet concept, and people, you know, they may attribute buffet with a lower quality. I'll tell you, if you walked into the back of a CeCe's, everything is fresh. They make their dough in-store fresh every single day. The quality of the ingredients is really, really high. And I was very surprised by that. I mean, it's a really high-quality product. So I encourage folks to go and focus on the quality because you can't go wrong. You're always going to have a better-tasting product with a higher-quality product.
That's great. So now, on the opposite end there, so how do you then interview or evaluate potential like franchisees or investors? How does that work? I mean, again, playing both sides, these are your babies now. And, you know, you don't want to just hand that off to someone who's got enough money to buy it. It's there's got to be a lot more to it than that, especially for all the care that you put into it.
Well, the brands that we focus on tend to be anywhere from 25 to 350 units. Mm-hmm. And so we call those adolescent brands. They're past proof of concept. They're in a couple of markets. Maybe they've already started franchising. And, you know, maybe they've just hit a speed bump somewhere. Maybe they're just out of favor. They're not very sexy, but they are great businesses. As we think about it, every brand goes through a cycle. And there's a cycle of evolution and then innovation and then scaling up and so forth. And so the same franchisee that's a 300 unit KFC or Taco Bell franchisee may not be an ideal candidate for what we do because they're focused on scale. They're focused on large markets, controlling big pieces of the business. And candidly, we're focused on folks that are really involved in their market. So our typical franchisee and probably the ideal profile of our franchisee is going to be somebody who is either new to franchising but really wants to get into the business and work in their business and be hands-on and in the stores. Or it's going to be somebody that's probably in a smaller market or it's a family business and they've got anywhere from 3 to 30 locations amongst whatever they're involved in. And they really love being very hands-on, not to mean that they're in the stores every day all the time, but they really enjoy being involved in their business. It's not going to be just an investment for them. They really, they believe this is it. And so we want very active, hands-on operators. That's the easiest way for us to describe them. And so when somebody really knows their business, they know their business and they want to be there, they want to, you know, build relationships with their leadership teams, with their managers, with their employees. They want to participate and support their local communities. Those are the folks that we're looking for. And those That's are awesome. The ones that do the best in our organization.
Most successful at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. Probably like your mom was, right?
When she started. That's right.
You know?
That's right.
It all comes back around. So when you look at like a successful growing restaurant, or I guess brands to maybe invest in or buy, is there a common denominator? Is it always like that sort of fresh type of thing? Or is there anything that you have in your criteria that you're really kind of honing in on as far as there's something you're seeing in the market that you find to be successful or you think will be successful?
You know, the ingredients are very simple. First and foremost, we start with the food. And interestingly, a lot of people look at franchises and they just see it as a business. They don't think of it as what does the business do? So we always, as I mentioned earlier, we have a disproportionate focus on quality. And so we start with the food. That's great. in a world where there is so much commoditization and so much a sea of sameness across so many different brands and products, the easy way to stand out is focus on quality, focus on taste. People go out to eat because food tastes good. If you wanted bad food or you wanted bland food, you could probably just do that yourself. But you go to restaurants because they're known for something. And so we want to make sure that when you come in and you're getting something that we are known for, that you say, that's a darn good, whatever it is, taco, burger, pizza, that's a darn good, beverage, coffee, tea, you know, whatever that was. And you want to say, geez, I'm glad I went out for that rather than trying to make something at home. So distinctly, it's got to be darn good. Now, from there, we look at the bones of the business. And usually, we're investing in things that we think we can substantially improve, whether it's unit count, whether it's quality or process or profitability. But if the product itself is pretty darn good, then you can work on the rest. You can figure out how to get them to better profitability, faster growth, whatever it may be. We think we can help.
Yeah. Well, you make a really good point, a very astute one, especially when it comes to food. Like, you know, obviously like we have the Vigor brand for that markets restaurants, but we also have an agency called Quench. It does food and beverage and CPG. And what we've known and noticed is, you know, when the economy's down, sure, there's a reason out there for dollar menus and there's, you know, savings and stuff. But, you know, the place where people will, for lack of a better word, treat themselves is what they put in their mouths, right? I mean, so they'll still pay for premium ice cream when things aren't so good, because that's that little pleasure they can have. It's not, you know, obviously it's not some overindulgence or a great expense, but a great burger. I mean, that's pretty, it brings a lot of joy, you know?
So. It's the little things that bring you joy. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I'll tell you, you know, I didn't understand the difference in the various qualities of ice cream, except in the CPG aisle. Right. You knew that you could get the store brand, which was one thing. And don't get me wrong, it's tasty and it's a nice treat. Or you could go for the super premium with the very high butterfat. And so I thought, well, geez, I guess this experience only exists in the grocery aisle, until one day I tried a Brewster's or a Handel's ice cream. Mm-hmm. And I was blown away. Now, it's not the kind of thing that you're going to go for every day or every week. Right. But when I think about having ice cream, I can go to a lot of different places, or I can just say, when I go out for ice cream, as infrequently or frequently as that is, I just want to get something that I know is going to be so delicious. And I'm going to go to the place where it's just going to knock my socks off, and I'll pay just a little bit more. And I'm okay with that. I just won't do it as often, but I want it when I want it. And I'll tell you, it's the service, it's the quality, it's the taste. Those things combined create the addiction. Just have to have it.
And I'm sure in most of your brands, you have a lot of repeat clients coming in because they're getting the quality, they see the quality, they taste the quality, and it's worth it. And it's a ongoing, probably, I'm sure it becomes habitual. So that's fantastic. So, okay, I want to talk about, like, last year, I think it was last year, you bought Rusty Taco and Dunn Brothers. with Gala Capital. You did it with an all cash deal, so you didn't take on any debt. Talk to me about cash deals and what are the advantages, disadvantages? And I know you're adverse to debt. I am too. So I absolutely respect that. So talk to me a little bit about that and how you've done all that.
Well, you know, in both cases, they needed some investment. They needed some love. And if you put leverage on a business, you've got a lot of reporting requirements. You've got, you know, metrics that you've got to hit, ratios you've got to hit and report to your bank. It puts constraints on you. Debt is not bad. Debt is fine. It's a tool to grow a business, but the business has to be ready to grow in a meaningful way. And it's got to be pretty stable and strong in order to continue to fulfill those criteria that your bank is going to ask you about. And in the case of these two brands, we thought that these businesses needed some work. They weren't bad businesses, but they just needed some work. And our perspective is we'd rather do that with our own money and do it in a way that we don't have a lot of constraints on us. We can make the investments that we need to make that are for the long run. And that may be 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. But when you've got debt, you know, you really need to focus on cash flow rather than making those investments that need to happen and pay off over the long period of time, because you've got to service that debt. So our perspective is, let's do it where we've got a lot of freedom, a lot of flexibility. Let's go ahead and make these investments. We'll do it with all cash. And that way we've got a little more control over what we do, when we do, how we do. And as we get these things ready and we're starting to grow them and scale them up, then we'll look at what can they support reasonably. And we'll probably put a little bit of debt on each of these businesses, but it'll be sometime in the future.
Gotcha. That makes total sense. So when you're working on a new franchise, you make it a point to have very detailed conversations with current franchisees, which is very smart. How does that process work? And, you know, what do you learn, you know, from those conversations?
Well, I think that there are some franchisees that candidly have just been waiting for the phone to ring so they can talk to somebody. It is fascinating to me how infrequently folks are speaking to franchisees, including executives of brands. They think they've got it all figured out and they're just going to send the memos out and send the promotions out and everybody needs to get on board. Mm-hmm. Now, in many cases, that may be true, but this is a team effort. You got to remember, the franchisee puts up the money. The franchisee runs that restaurant. You know, they're taking more risk than the franchisor. And so you have to respect them as effectively your partner in the business. And you don't always have to agree. They did sign an agreement. You do control the intellectual property, and you're going to set the tone and the direction of the brand and the business. But it's a collaboration. And I think no different than in a successful marriage or a successful partnership or even in a successful corporate environment, you have to find a way to effectively communicate with your peers. And I consider the franchisees to be our peers. So we want to hear them. We want to listen to them. We want to take their ideas and their feedback into consideration. And, you know, listen, we're not the ones that have it all figured out. As the old saying goes, some of the best ideas come from the franchisees because they are toe-to-toe, face-to-face with the customer. They see the behavior. They see the interaction every single day, more often than we do, that's for sure.
Yeah, they're the boots on the ground. Have you ever backed away from a deal based on, and you certainly don't have to mention any names, but have you ever backed away from a deal based on some feedback that you've heard from the franchisees that kind of scared you off a little bit?
You know, we have actually. Wow. There were concerns in one brand that we looked at, and there were a number of franchisees that said, geez, you know, I'm not making money. I'm losing a lot of money. I can't keep doing this. I'm just going to close my store down. And we heard that over and over and over again. So then you have to think to yourself, what am I really buying? And maybe the investment banker did a great job in polishing this thing up and putting a story behind it. But you know, when you really get to the reality of it, this wasn't going to be much of a brand for much longer. And mm-hmm. So we have to make the hard decisions that we either are going to say, no, thank you, or we're going to have to recommend a price adjustment because we think in order to really stem the loss there of franchisees, we're going to have to put a lot of incentive in place. We're going to have to make a big investment into them and their marketing and their operations. And that changes the economics of a deal.
Yeah. I mean, that totally tracks. I mean, and it's interesting because as an agency too, we've had several situations where, and we were talking about this earlier, you were on both sides, the franchisee, franchisor. I think that's really, in a way, your superpower. I think your empathy and your understanding really is a massive benefit in your world. And but many times we've been asked to, for lack of a better word, act like the, whatever you want to call it, bulletproof vest, liaison, mediator between the franchisees and the franchisor. And I always felt like that was like, I mean, we're happy to do it as an agency, but I always felt like that just signals that there's a really a communication gap. You know what I mean?
I think you're right.
You know?
I think you're right. I encourage people, have the hard conversations.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that you're going to be comfortable doing it. They are uncomfortable conversations, but that's just life. That's just life.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, well, let's have some fun with this now.
I
mean, you have a lot of restaurants. I mean, obviously, you have your choice every day. I'm sure you do, but you eat in your restaurants that you invest in, correct?
Oh, every week. Okay. Every single week.
Yep. That's what I would ask you. How often, and like, is it a coffee thing? Then I get a pizza one day and maybe a burger the next?
Yeah, I'll mix it up. Exactly.
Nice. Nice. All right. So now I want to get your opinions on some of the menu items in your restaurants, in your current portfolio. Okay. So what's the best burger on the menu at Muya? What's your go-to?
You know, so best burger, that's such a personal question, right? Everybody's got their own approach. Mine, I'm a real fan of what made them successful, right? What is their core product? And for us, our core classic is the Muya double cheeseburger.
Nice.
Man, it is just such a amazing, delicious burger the way that it should be made. It's fantastic. If I'm feeling indulgent, I'll pop some jalapenos on there, but it's my go-to.
I'm getting hungry. I didn't eat lunch today, so I'm East Coast, so I'm ready. That's fantastic. All right, Cece's, if you're building your own pizza, what are we getting?
So again, I'm a classic kind of guy. It's going to be probably a pepperoni. But I'll tell you what, if you haven't had it, Cece's is known for a mac and cheese pizza.
Oh, wow.
Now, it's not something you're going to eat every day, but it is definitely something you have got to try. It is addictive.
I'll take your word for it. I'm Italian, so I'm, mac and cheese, we never put that on pizza. I don't know. So
I know. It sounds wacky, but you just got to give it a shot one day.
Yeah, they're both good foods. You know, put it together, it's like peanut butter and jelly probably. So yeah. maybe it works. Famous Dave's Barbecue, you ribs, chicken, or catfish?
Boy, I'm going to throw you for a loop here. Although I love all three of those, you've got to try the brisket. Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
It is fantastic. Now, if I'm not having the brisket, it's the St. Louis style ribs. Hands down, the juiciest, meatiest ribs I've ever had in my life. They are, they're addictive.
You're not just the owner. You're obviously a connoisseur and a fan. So that comes through. That's not marketing, I can tell. All right, Dunn Brothers Coffee. What are we ordering there? Like, what's your go-to there?
So if you don't know much about Dunn Brothers, we roast our coffee fresh in the locations. That is really unique. And so the coffee you're having, or coffee-based drink you're having, the coffee that goes into that has been roasted within the last few days. If you haven't tried fresh roasted coffee, is remarkable. You can truly, truly taste the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's just, what is the micro lot or special roast that they have during that time frame? And it's that with maybe just a little bit of milk or just a splash of cream, but just trying to keep it simple so you really get all the real flavors and notes of that coffee coming through. So absolutely. I'm a simple guy when it comes to coffee.
Hey, mine's just black with a few ice cubes in it. You know, I call it the Grandma Agnes move. My grandmother used to always put ice cubes in her coffee. And so I've been drinking coffee all my life, but I love just black ice, black coffee with little ice cubes in it. And I said, I don't do the triple latte.
So you're saying
that
grandma invented iced coffee. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah. It's not even ice, just a few ice cubes just so I don't burn my mouth. And it's probably because I like to drink coffee and I don't, so it's not loaded with ice. Just, a few ice cubes just to cool it off. Right. So very, very sensitive lips. So. Okay. Rusty Taco, pork,
yes,
beef,
sir.
Shrimp, chicken.
You got to try the Rusty Taco. It's the original, named for our founder, the namesake. It's pork with some chunks of pineapple. It's just, it's a classic taco, which is the foundation of what Rusty built the brand upon. Now we've got a bunch of others, and they're very sort of Tex-Mex, taqueria style tacos that are really delicious. So there's that one. And then I would say, boy, that's my go-to every single time.
That's perfect.
Oh, so by the way, if you haven't tried, the queso at Rusty Taco is off the charts. People don't know that we have it, but we've got nachos, and you can do that with the queso, and you can do brisket or pulled pork or, you know, any kind of topping you want on there. Just off the charts. Fantastic.
Oh, you're killing me. Like I said, I haven't eaten lunch yet. It's going on 1 o'clock. So this is all good. I got to figure out what we're gonna have now. It's all going through my head. So, okay. What's up? What's next for Gala Partners? I mean, is there anything else on the horizon? I mean, obviously if you can't talk about it, you can't talk about, but anything that any categories you're excited about, anything you're kind of looking at, or anything you can talk about there?
You know, honestly, we're excited about what we have in the portfolio. Gotcha. We have so much runway with every one of these businesses that we have, that it's really got to be something special to get our attention. And right now, we just haven't seen anything that's that special. So we just double down on what we have, and we're just going deep, going long. Mm-hmm. You know, with Dunn Brothers, we just expanded into K-Cups and into CPG. So we're pushing some of our coffee through some grocery stores. We're going to be redesigning and relaunching our direct-to-consumer website and e-commerce pretty soon. We've got several new stores and new prototypes in the hopper. The same is true with Rusty. We're opening, I think it's 8 or 9 locations this year. And Muya, we just opened 2 of our very first drive-through locations, both company-owned. We want to get the ball rolling on drive-throughs. And so we're excited to prove that model out. And so far, the customers love it.
Yeah. Well, you brought up a couple really, I think, important points. You did load up on a lot of these brands here very recently, and you happened, I mean, no pun intended, but it seems like you covered every food group, like everything that's important as far as coffee, pizza, burgers, taco. I mean, you know, boy, it's
our plate is full.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally. Yeah. You nailed it. You nailed it. So, I mean, it does make a lot of sense to really kind of drive all that. And the other thing you brought up, which I personally see a lot is, you know, with our company, you know, we have about 5 different agencies in our portfolio, and one being Quench is CPG food and beverage, which is very different than restaurants. They just happen to sell food. So we have another company called Vigor that just does restaurant expertise. But it's amazing how many are doing we have this product, people find it in the restaurant, it's great marketing, they have it, they love it, like your coffee. And all of a sudden it's slided over to CPG. And it's like people, hey, I love that coffee. It's fresh. And I walk into the store and I can buy it. And it's such a smart move. You see it both ways. I've seen it from the CPG side going into restaurants and the restaurant side going to CPG. So I think that's it's a really, really smart move. So now I have one last question. And it's going to be hard for you. Probably the hardest thing you have to answer all day, because you can't say one of your restaurants. If you had all one last final meal, what would you eat, where, and with who?
Boy, that is a great question. First of all, with whom? It'd be my family. Hands down. There's nobody else who I want to spend time with as often as possible than with my parents and my wife and my kids and my brother and his family. My family means everything to me. What would the meal be? It's got to be something that everybody loves. And so when I think about what does everybody love, it's probably pizza. Everybody loves pizza.
There you go.
And you can customize it every which way you want. Where would I go? My goodness. Or what would I have? There's a restaurant in Los Angeles, which I truly, truly enjoy. I can't ever think that I had a bad meal there. And it's an Italian restaurant. They happen to have amazing pizza. It's called Osteria Mozza. Nice. And they have a sister brand called Pizzeria Mozza. And it's just some of the best food I've ever had in my life. It's the service. It's the quality. It's the flavors. It's everything all combined. And I don't even remember what I spent. I'm sure it was too much. But, oh, man, it's so memorable.
Well, hey, back to your the concept on your burger, right? I mean, if the food hits the mark, you really don't care what you spend. I mean, you know, you know, it's, it don't be frivolous, but quality and you know, it's so important. And you were very smart, and you're a smart guy. You covered it. So if your family or anybody in your family watches this podcast, you know, you answered the right, you had the right answer. Only with my family. So that's fantastic. I mean, you're amazing. I love watching what you've been doing. It's a pleasure to talk to you, and it's great knowing you. And I look forward to the next time I see you.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. I'll see you soon.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care.